Brethren, do you have some difficult questions that you would like to ask God? I know I do. And unfortunately, many people that I went to school with, high school, college, of course, that's been a while back, have become maybe disillusioned because of what appears to be inconsistencies with what the Bible teaches about God. They question how a loving God can allow children to starve in the world, or why he doesn't stop maybe senseless violence. Why does God allow things like this to happen? The result of this spiritual disenchantment is that more and more people are deciding that the Bible is a myth, or even worse, that it is a book filled with dangerous superstitions. If we really want to understand the God of the Bible, we must be willing to honestly face these issues and to deal with the difficult questions. If you've become disillusioned because God seems unreachable, arbitrary, unfair, let's reason together and look at this difficult question. Why does God allow evil to happen in the world? We live in a world where complex news stories are condensed into 30-second sound bites, and multifaceted human issues are solved in a 60-minute television TV show. Well, brethren, real life is much more difficult. This is one of the reasons why people like to escape into fantasy entertainment, where all problems and mysteries are neatly wrapped up between the commercials. Of course, the difficult questions of life cannot be solved in 30-second sound bites, brethren. It feels sometimes like the answers never come. How many times do you wish that maybe you could have a one-on-one conversation with God to answer all of maybe your difficult and hard questions? Brethren, today we're going to look at the difficult question about God and discover some understanding of what he's actually doing in your life. Brethren, there's one overriding issue, and that is the foundation of many of the most difficult questions. And here's what it is. If God is all-powerful and loving, why does he allow evil? Why doesn't he stop bad things from happening? You know, brethren, this question requires a little more than just a few platitudes about how God is God and he can do whatever he wants to do. Especially if you're the one who's brutally abused, or you're struggling with maybe, why did God allow a friend to commit suicide? Or why would the all-powerful creator of life revealed in the Bible to be merciful and loving allow a senseless drive-by shooting, or a terrorist to blow up a bus filled with children, or any kind of things that happen in this world that we know? Brethren, to get to the heart of the question, there's a series of steps that we must take in order to bring some clarity to this very emotional issue. Now, brethren, the first step in dealing with this dilemma is that you have to believe that God has a reason for creating humanity. Just because the human experience is confusing doesn't mean that God is confused. God's purpose for humanity involves giving each person freedom of choice. We get to choose our actions, brethren. Now, of course, the problem is that every choice has consequences, some for good and some for evil. Now, of course, God could fix this. He could stop all suffering by redesigning each and every one of us so that we have no freedom of choice. I mean, he could just make us into little robots that simply respond to our programming without conscious thoughts or emotions. And we know this is not what God wants, because the Bible tells us in the very first part of Genesis, in the Bible, that God made human beings in his image. We're created to be conscious, creative, loving, emotional beings like he is. And of course, brethren, this requires that we have freedom to make decisions and choices. And while there could be another option that God could carry out to stop all bad things from happening, and that is to stop all bad consequences. You know, maybe a man is robbing the convenience store and he pulls out a gun and he pulls the trigger, but the bullet always misses. Or maybe when you're cheating on your income taxes, an angel takes control of your fingers and you type in the proper figures. This would be another way of controlling our choices. But brethren, inside we'd still be thinking evil. And let's face it, most people would resent God for interfering in their lives. So our first point in understanding why God allows evil, God created human beings in His image and gave us freedom of choice. All choices have consequences that can be both good and bad. And think about this. There are billions of human beings making decisions every day, producing billions of consequences that lead to billions more decisions. And we're affected not only by our choices, but by the choices of others. No wonder life can be so messy, brother. Knowing that freedom of choice produces evil does not solve all of our problems. If this is the only answer to evil, then the human experience is hopeless. So here's a second point in understanding why God allows evil. Number two. Brethren, God wants us to learn how to choose good. Listen to what the Apostle Peter wrote towards the end of the New Testament period in 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 10. 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 10. He says, "He who would love life and see good days, let him refrain his tongue from evil at his lips, from speaking to deceit. Let him turn away from evil and do good. Let him seek peace and pursue it. For the eyes of the Lord are on the righteous, and his ears are open to their prayers. But the face of the Lord is against those who do evil." Brethren, Peter is actually quoting from various passages in the Old Testament book of Psalms. And his point is very clear. If you love life and want good consequences, then turn from evil and do good at the same time. See that, quote, "The face of the Lord is against those who do evil." Brethren, God withdraws from us when we do evil. When you and I reject God's standards of good and evil, we find ourselves alone and cut off from His presence. You see, one of the reasons why we have a difficulty with the idea that God withdraws from us when we do something which He defines as bad is because we don't understand His reaction to evil. We're always concerned with what we feel and think. But we seldom consider, what does God think and what does He feel? It is written in the book of Proverbs in chapter 6, verse 16. Proverbs chapter 6, verse 16, it says, "These six things the Lord hates." You may have never thought of God hating something, but there are human actions and even thoughts that God hates. This passage continues, "Yes, seven are an abomination to Him." Abomination is a strong word in Hebrew, brethren, and it means despicable. The following list are things God finds despicable. It says, "A proud look, a lying tongue, hands that shed innocent blood, a heart that deceives wicked plans, feet that are swift to running to evil, a false witness who speaks lies, and one who sows discord among brethren." Brethren, God allows evil because He's given us freedom of choice. But He also hates evil and withdraws from those who practice evil. God is saddened. God suffers because of our evil. And this is one of the reasons why we don't see God's involvement in many of our human endeavors. There is no human society that reflects God's intended purpose for His children. Now, of course, this does not mean that God is totally withdrawn from humanity. He touches our lives in profound and loving ways in spite of our rejection of His good. And He is intimately involved in the lives of those who wish to turn to Him for good. And this explains the problem. But we're still left with, how can we experience God's presence in an evil world, and why does God allow evil to happen to good people? This is a question that has plagued humans for thousands of years. Why would an all-powerful, loving God allow evil? Why doesn't God intervene and stop all the suffering caused by evil? Why does God allow bad things to happen to good people? Brethren, the biblical book of Genesis records the story of the family of Abraham, who lived almost 4,000 years ago. Abraham's grandson, Jacob, had 12 sons. Like so many families, there were sibling rivalries between the brothers. Joseph, one of the younger brothers, was the center of the family conflict because he was favored by his father. And one day, some of his brothers conspired to sell Joseph to a slave to a group of nomads. And of course, brethren, Joseph was dismayed as he found himself carted off to Egypt, where he was sold again to a household of wealthy and prominent Egyptians. Now, the Egyptian's wife tried to seduce Joseph, but he did what was right and he refused. The result was that Joseph was falsely accused and thrown into prison. Brethren, he suffered because he did good. For a number of years, Joseph languished in prison. Imagine that. He'd been betrayed by his family, humiliated as a slave, falsely accused, and now he seemed to have no future. Still, brethren, in his suffering, abuse, and despair, Joseph continued to see God as the solution to his problems. Brethren, when you read the book of Genesis, you find that God intervened in Joseph's life. And through a series of events, he became a very powerful man in the Egyptian government and saved his family from catastrophe. Joseph knew that God was working something out and something out good in his life, even in the midst of all the abuse, suffering, and evil that was perpetuated upon him. And brethren, instead of becoming bitter or using his misfortune as an excuse to commit crimes or abuse others, he was a happy, productive person in spite of the evil that happened to him. Now, brethren, this brings us to our third point in understanding how God can allow evil. Number three, God can bring good from suffering caused by evil. As long as you blame God for allowing evil, you can't turn to God to the solution to evil. Joseph's story, brethren, is inspiring because he refused to allow the wrong actions of others to define his life. He accepted that he lived in a world of both good and evil, and he chose to dwell on the goodness of God instead of being obsessed by his suffering and caused by others. The willingness to see God's goodness in the confusion and unfairness and bad things happening to good people, reality of life, is one of the greatest keys to personal happiness, brethren. And let's face it, brethren, some suffering seems senseless, and we have a limited control to stop evil and suffering. Even when we try to do good, sometimes we produce more suffering. There's a story that a family whose teenage son was passing away, was dying, and the family doctor was very, very concerned. He was leaning against the wall, obviously despondent. He lamented how a medical knowledge and medication could not save the boy, only delay his dying. He was struggling with the feeling that all of his efforts had done nothing more than prolong the family's suffering as they watched their son die. You know, the boy's sickness was not because of any evil that he had done. The doctor, he was just trying to do his best to alleviate the suffering, but felt hopeless in the face of this, what seemed like a senseless suffering. And here was a doctor trying to do good, and he felt weak. He felt hopeless in the face of senseless death. He could find no answers. But brethren, life isn't hopeless, and I wish that he would know that. The boy's life had a purpose, and God was in that hospital with them. And the boy's health crisis was not the end of his ultimate story. Brethren, life isn't hopeless. Even when we can't control the events, God can turn your life around in the present and bring good by suffering caused by evil. And he promises, brethren, for all of us a better future, even if we cannot understand it right now, even if somehow we feel lost. And this leads us, brethren, to our final point in understanding why God allows evil. Number four, God will only allow evil and suffering to exist for a time. He promises a better future for those who trust in Him. Earlier, I spoke about God's purpose for creating human beings. The Apostle Paul unites the concept of the consequences of evil and God's purpose in his letter in the Romans. Romans chapter 8, one of the greatest chapters in the entire Bible. Romans chapter 8, Paul writes, Romans chapter 8, verse 18, it says, Paul writes, "For I consider that the sufferings of this present time are not worthy to be compared with the glory which has revealed in us, for the earnest expectation of the creation eagerly awaits for the revealing of the sons of God." Over 2,000 years ago, Paul lived in a world of evil and suffering just like ours today, brethren. And the book of Acts records how Paul suffered terribly because of the abuse of other people and evil done upon him. People, brethren, tried to stone him to death. He was beaten and unjustly thrown in jail, all because he was a Christian. Paul saw this suffering caused by evil to be inconsequential to the future God had planned for him and for us as sons of God. You know, it's easy to give in to the feeling that God is unfair because he allows evil and suffering. I mean, how can he understand what we are suffering? But brethren, God does understand our suffering. And think about this. Jesus Christ, the Son of God, was sent by God to suffer all the hate and abuse and evil that it could produce. And our suffering to learn and to choose God, to choose good, and our confusion and despair because we can't always make sense of God's decisions and what he's doing. We can see his purpose in us through the work of Jesus Christ. Peter wrote in 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 21. It says, "For this you were called, because Christ also suffered for us, leaving us an example that you should follow in his steps." In conclusion, brethren, through your sufferings because of evil, you can learn to follow the example of Jesus and serve God by doing good to others and trusting in God's purpose for your life. God will then help you see beyond the difficulties of this present and help you anticipate the time of Christ's return to establish God's kingdom on this earth.